This week on the program, shit, what if this podcast has all been in my head for the last 15 years? Just like today's film, Identity! Oh, Lord Almighty, I'm Andrew Jupin.
I'm Steve Tannick. Oh, wait, or am I Helen Hunt's friend from Mad About You? Or...
Malcolm Rivers here.
And we hate movies.
Wait, what? Wait, what?
Hello, everyone. Welcome to We Hate Movies. Thank you for tuning into the fine program, as always. Yes, that's right. February is upon us, and we are here to talk about a whole month's worth. And now listen up front, everybody, because everybody missed the instructions last month.
Oh, yeah, they did.
The thing this month is movies with endings that make you go, wait, what? Mm-hmm.
That's right. It is wait, what, Uary?
Yes, wait, right. What? You were so excited. Yes, if you didn't get the instructions, look under the couch, get that Alan Wrench out. Last month, some people didn't get the memo. But here we are, and wait, what, you were? These movies will feature some type of twist.
And I think these are, a lot of these are just like things that we've been talking about for years anyway. And we've been looking, let's put box and just hand them away.
Exactly. Like with Sheen Prol, it's like, let's get this off the desk already.
Exactly. Right.
Exactamundo. So here we are talking a big one. This has been, I think, on our lips since 2010, really. Yes. This is Identity from 2003, directed, I was stunned to find out, by James Mangold, which I guess I knew at one point and completely forgot about, because folks may have heard me say this already, but indeed, embarrassingly, I've seen this movie quite a bit, indeed saw it in theaters, owned it on standard definition DVD, and just paid to rent it off of Apple this afternoon. Well,
that was my first wait, what, of the whole month, was just like, wait, James Mangold directed this?
Totally. The twist is in the opening credits.
But guys, it's balanced out with the writer. I don't know if you looked up Michael Cooney.
Yep, go right ahead with this information.
He wrote and directed Jack Frost, the horror movie, and Jack Frost 2, the horror movie. Which I didn't even know there was a second one.
Dude, he goes on vacation in that second movie.
Oh, hell
we
yeah.
did do the first one a trillion years ago. I believe that was a side order of sleaze, right?
Yes, but I think it was on the main feed. So if it's not there, it's probably in the Patreon archive of all the old episodes.
That's right.
It's fascinating. I mean, James Mangold's got to have a fascinating career. I think now he's a prestige director, but he's always just sort of been like a really competent workaday director. I think. You know what I mean? I think that's that's what this is. And this movie is actually, for all of its faults, actually pretty competently directed. Like, there's atmosphere here. You know what I mean? Like, before the movie literally falls apart because of the rotten screenplay, you kind of care about some of these characters.
Dude, all I could think about was that Rodney joke when he guests on The Simpsons where he's like, now everything's falling apart like a Chinese motorcycle. Like, like this movie, like you're watching this movie, man, and like you can see the movie, like the tires on the movie start shaking, and you're like, are all four tires of this movie going to fall off at the exact same time?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, you could have done a killer snowman again, or aliens were doing it.
Exactly. Also, and you know what? Another great line from that great episode of The Simpsons. Hey, who the hell am I talking to? Apparently nobody. Apparently nobody.
Man. We should mention, I don't know, I guess the audience didn't realize this, but Chris Gavin, figment of our imagination.
Yes, he has been the whole time.
It's been a collective hypnosis we've all been under. Just like you, dear listener, what's your birthday? Say it out loud. Holy shit, that's my birthday.
I mean, this is, I think, a great example of, like, either, like, we're going to be talking about twists a lot this month, obviously, and don't worry about it, folks. We are, the button on the month is M. Night Shyamalan, so don't worry about that. But, like, a thing with a twist is, I feel like if you have a twist that's early enough in your movie where it just becomes the movie, that's acceptable. Mm-hmm. And if you have a twist at the very end of a movie, like a Shyamalan kind of thing, where it's like Bruce Willis in the final minutes of that movie realizes what's up, that's a twist that's acceptable too, because you're in and you're out. This movie makes the fatal mistake of having your twist so ill-timed. There's 20 minutes left of the movie, and you got to sit with this stupid shit.
I agree with that. That was the ball game, as far as I'm concerned, yes. You know?
Well, because, I mean, the weird thing is, I mean, like, I guess we'll do it now. The twist is, it's all in Pruitt Taylor Vince's head.
Yes.
None of these characters are actually real, and they're all fighting each other for, I guess, identity supremacy, which is an interesting idea, which isn't explored in this movie at all. It's just sort of the idea of who's actually killing all these quote-unquote
people. That's what I'm saying, right? If you had this, like, at the jump,
yes,
you could explore that world because you're not, like, tee-hee, like, hiding this thing. Otherwise, a twist in a movie is like robbing a bank. Dude, you fucking get in and you get out, which is why Shyamalan puts those things at the end because you're fucking in and you're out.
And also, most of his movies that are good withstand the twist one way or another. Or you're like, oh, I kind of wish that twisted. Like, I mean, The Village is actually a pretty good movie until the twist, honestly. I think, what do you call it there? So The Usual Suspects, for example. Like, if Kaiser Soze is anyone else than Kevin Spacey, that movie is still pretty goddamn good. You know what I mean?
But also, like, if you find out that Kaiser Soze is Kevin Spacey and there's 20 more minutes left of Usual Suspects, that fucking sucks too.
Watching him catch the bus with that.
Well, that's just him and Pete Postlethwaite. Like, it's like kind of turns into comedians getting coffee in cars or whatever.
Yeah, or turns into Sideways. They go up to wine country, have a little time.
I'm not drinking any fucking Merlot.
Pete Postlethwaite in that movie, unfortunately, doing brown face? Question mark. Why?
I know he's got the name, but is he caked up? I don't remember.
He's a little bit caked up. It's a little. Yeah, he's playing a Pakistani in that movie, and that's just not. That's not that beautiful Irish actor. Sorry, folks.
No, that's a weird one.
Yep.
That's the only reason that's the only reason it's hard to talk about Usual Suspects these days.
That is the only reason.
The director's got an impeccable record.
I'll tell you
prison
what,
record, or it should be.
I'll tell you what, guys. I got the 7 4K that just got released, and I had not watched that movie since probably George W. Bush was in office.
Maybe. Bit of a wait, what?
But man, it's pretty cathartic watching him get shot the fucking head.
That's a good one. That's a rainy movie, just like this one. A lot of rain,
dude. But Eric, as you pointed out, man, this much of a downpour in the Nevada desert.
I mean,
that's their first clue. This is they're setting up the twist. You know it's in the mind of a simpleton because it's Nevada having biblical rain, and that is not the nonstop focus of conversation.
Can I say, I think what's interesting about this movie, though, is at least with the casting of this movie, it lets you know that I feel like James Mangold is probably a pretty rad dude to work with, because Pruitt Taylor Vince was in his very first movie, Heavy.
Yes.
Leota, obviously, in Copland. Right? Ray Lewis in Copland?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So, like, it's cool to see, like, previous Mangold players, like, coming back into his movies and stuff like that. I don't know. I just think that's kind of, it's always a good sign when you want to work with a dude. I mean, speaking of the fact, we're just talking about fucking, you know, Brian, what's his face movies.
Singer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. He's been so out of my mind, I can't even remember his last
name. Brian Voldemort. but no, yeah, this has got a great, like, cast. There's a lot of familiar faces here. It's great. I miss these mid-range movies. You know, that's sort of like, even if it's a dumb twist, even if it's like doesn't hold up, you know, under the weight of Rodney Dangerfield on a Chinese motorcycle. I still just miss that ecosystem. This almost feels like a 90s leftover.
I mean,
big time.
If this movie was made today, it would absolutely be, unless it was by like a prestige director, A24 style, it would absolutely be a VOD situation. It would just be 1,000%
right. VOD. It would star fucking Aaron Eckhart and no one else.
Well, or actually John Cusack, honestly.
Yeah, that's
the king of the VODs.
Poor guy. Absolutely. I got to get into that dirty old Cusack. My God, what is he making these days?
Well, just a lot of really bad, like, crime movies. And then his two most recent credits on IMDb, a thing that came out last year and something he's got coming out this year, are straight up Chinese movies that he's in. Like, it's all a Chinese crew, cast, everything like that. And then John Cusack just dropped in the middle of it all.
Well, everybody felt bad. Everyone asked that question, like, what is going on with Bruce Willis? And then it was like, oh, I'm sorry. You know what I mean? It was a very quick, like, everyone sobered up rightfully and, like, left that alone. But I think you could ask, what is going on with John Cusack? I mean, at least I hope.
Well, because if anything, he is he's an actual presence on social media. So, like, you know that, like, he's still talking fine and everything. So it's not like he's being, like, secretly duped into doing these movies until he can't fucking talk anymore.
I don't know. I mean, you see his grammar on his posts.
that's actually true. Dude was pulled out of school to act too much, I feel. Maybe. Yeah, I don't know.
I
look at that punctuation like, come on, man.
But I still like John Cusack as a presence, and I think this is maybe one of his... Is this one of his last okay kind of roles?
Kind of, sort of. I mean,
at this kind of like a level, he's you know, it's an ensemble, but like he's the lead of it.
Right. Well, he was also in 2012 after this. He's doing a ton of rom-coms as well.
That's true. Hot Tub Time Machine was pretty big. Yeah, I mean, his career was fine, but it's just like, it just feels like he slid out of my memory.
Oh, for sure. So it's
because
all
the stuff you're talking about is like older than 10 years. I think I found the last, like, he's in it a lot and he's really great in it when he plays the older Brian Wilson in 2014's Love and Mercy. I think he's actually genuinely great in that movie.
Right. Yeah. I forgot about that one.
Because that's like he's in like half of it. And then the last thing, like the next year, he's got a tiny part as a priest in Spike Lee's Chi-Raq, which he's also good in. But it's like two scenes, and then after that you get Singularity, Blood Money, Arsenal, Distorted, River Runs Red, Never Grow Old, Utopia, Pursuit, Decoded. And Decoded was the Chinese movie, by the way. But like, yeah, just all of these like single word titles.
For a while he was doing stuff with Cage, and then Cage kind of spun out of that, you know what I mean? Like, it was like this weird, I think that's the idea, is like, you know, as they say, post through it. You know what I mean? Just keep going. Maybe one of them will hit a little bit of, maybe you get a little heat with one, then the next one is a bit more legitimate than, like, maybe somebody else is in your next movie. You know what I mean? Like, you just got to keep going, dude.
Oh, man. I think I found it, though. The thesis we're kind of working up here, you guys. 2014's The Prince. Mm. When his daughter is kidnapped, a retired assassin is drawn back into the life he gave up to rescue her. He must confront his former rival. This movie stars John Cusack and, you guessed it, Bruce Willis.
Of course.
Oh, and also Jason Patrick. But it looks like Jason Patrick is the main dude, and Bruce and Cuse are like, we're in it for a few seconds. But even still, there you go.
Mm-hmm. So we start this movie with Alfred Molina, like just sort of like narrating over, well, it's actually Prue Taylor Vince narrating this like creepy poem. I met a man who wasn't there, and then something else happened. It's spooky, scary. You know,
I met a man with seven wives, seven wives, and seven cats, and seven sex. I thought for a second that we were doing the Die Hard with a Vengeance nursery rhyme, and I was like, wait a second, better movie.
But this is
these are the counseling tapes of Malcolm Rivers, which is Pruitt Taylor Vince, and Alfred Molina as Dr. Malik is the
kind of a Dr. Loomis for this situation.
Oh, dude, yeah.
He writes evil on his notes, you see, at one point. Also, by the way, OG teeth, Alfred Molina, I think he must have got them fixed for Spider-Man.
Really? Okay.
Yes.
I would like to, we need to investigate this. I don't know what you TMZ, People Magazine, stop what you're doing. Get the chart. Get the timelines correct when Molina's molars got fixed.
Molina's molars. What a scoop. But you're right. And I think, because like that Spider-Man 2 is 2004, right?
Yeah, the next year. This is pretty much like the last outing for the OG teeth.
Which is fucked up because, like, why would a crazy mad scientist that creates octopus arms have fucking perfect teeth? Mm-hmm. Come on.
By the way, in my notes, I found the poem here that is, you're going to hear this a lot tonight. And if you watch this movie, you'll hear this nonstop.
And then you'll hear it in your nightmares when you go to sleep tonight after listening to this
episode. Of course. Yeah, because I've got this split personality stuff. Okay. So when I was going up the stairs, I met a man who wasn't there. He wasn't there again today. I wish he'd go away.
Wow. Oh, you know what? You can set that and you get a chuggy chug 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 chug. Now you got a corn song.
Yeah.
I met a man chug 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 at the top of the stairs. Kaboom, chickaboom,
bum. Identity. Wish he was it. Yeah.
Oh, I wouldn't follow that leader.
So like we just sort of like there's like this thing where like this like this nobody of a I guess he's an ADA is like calling somebody he's calling his boss he's like listen boss we're having the Malcolm Rivers trial tonight at midnight and he's like what
dude what are we doing it's like yeah
at
midnight
the stroke
session,
of midnight yes.
He's about to be executed so it's like here's this competency hearing that's been approved at the last second. But yeah, don't worry about it. You got to fucking get your ass out of bed because it's happening right now. And like the prison transport has been authorized. Like
mm-hmm. We had to get the judge out of bed who is
Holmes Osborne.
Yes. Donnie Darko's father.
That's yes. right. Yeah, that's right. The subject of this month's WLM, as a matter of fact.
That's right. Which will be available on patreon.com/weHateMovies, which is quite a value.
It is quite a value.
And that's not a freaky twist.
It is kind of great because like Holmes Osborne comes in, he's all pissed off and he's like, can't believe you got me out of bed. He's got one of these like these Texas I'll call him like a Texas dress coat where it's like it's got the black flocking on the top, which I kinda like.
I love it, yeah.
I love those things.
These are great.
I don't think as a New Yorker I'm allowed to wear them, but I do like them.
The only New Yorker that's allowed to wear them is David Byrne. And yeah. You, sir, are no David Byrne.
But no one's going to stop you. If they want to, you know what? Come and take it, all right?
That's true.
No, they wouldn't stop you, but they'd just be like, look at that short guy trying to be like David Byrne.
More like David Bowen. What? But so he's like, he's like, we're starting the trial right now. They're like, no, it's actually illegal because my client's not here. He's like, I don't want to hear anything about that. All I wanted to, I want to get through this trial because obviously if you wheel in big old Pruitt Taylor Vince, the movie is ruined. So it's like this thing yep. where it's like legal, because you can't legally have a trial without the fucking person present. That's lit.
No, no, no. For the purposes of the twist ending of this tale, the prisoner will remain a mystery until there's 15 minutes left in the story.
Objection, Your Honor. There's a twist end to this movie. Oh, then go right ahead.
Well, oh, by all means.
Nevada state law says that's okay.
Oh, the twist ending decree of 1973. Got it. All right.
So then.
We jump to John Hawks as this motel attendant. He's watching Wheel of Fortune. And in runs John C. McGinley in a role that I can only describe as against type.
Can I ask a question with his watching of Wheel of Fortune? Mm-hmm.
Eagerly, right?
Wait, he's cheering on. He's telling everyone to buy a vowel every turn, which doesn't make a ton of sense.
Sure.
And he's cheering on when they do. And he's also hectoring them when they don't. I mean, like, no one's watched Wheel of Fortune this intently.
Never, never. And he's taking shots and stuff. He's having the time of his life with Wheel of Fortune.
I mean, I think when, you know, later on when we learn about John Hawks.
Yes.
Fake character such as it is, like. Yeah, I think cracking beers and cheering on the wheel is the only thing this guy's got keeping that gun out of his mouth. You know what I mean?
But do you think that inside of you, inside of your psyche, there is a guy
who gambles on Wheel of Fortune?
Yes, yes, that could definitely enjoy that program.
Well, that's exactly. Thank you, Eric, because that's the number one problem with this movie. Like, if it's like, if it is this like battle for identity supremacy, like, and these people were more like, I don't know what the word I'm looking for, but like not stock characters, but like strong characters. Like one, you know, John Cusack is the strong, you know, legal type, and he believes in what's right. And Amanda Peet is like the lady, you know what I mean? Like, and there's like all
the
these
lady.
Different things, or a sexually promiscuous woman. Like, oh, yes. maybe this person's got like different, you know, sides to their personality. That makes sense. But what does the mother from, what does the sister from Mad About You have to do with any of this? What is, you know what I mean? What is nervous John C. McGinley doing? Why is there an abusive couple here? Like, what are
I can explain all of this. Okay. Okay. So Malcolm Rivers, this guy that's got, it's all going on in his head. He's probably never driven a car before, right? So he's like, oh God, so this is the guy, this is my personality that drives the car. So he's kind of a nebbish nerd.
Mm.
And he's John C. McGinley. And even when he blows a tire, he even pulls over in a nerdish manner.
Yeah. Dude, I've never seen more nerdy pulling over in my life, dude.
It's crazy.
And he's very
like,
weird.
He is narrating everything. He's like, the driver has to pull over at a 4-point degree angle and blah, blah, blah. And he's like, keep your lights on, make sure that you check your passageways and all this shit. It's like, oh boy.
Yeah, you got all them safety tips down, but you didn't think to tell your wife not to stand out the fucking road, huh?
Maybe it's a prank in prison. You know, they only let him read the DMV manual thing.
You're right, because when he starts that safety speech, the first thing he says is 10 and 2. He's like, 10 and 2, turn into the skid. Okay, hey, foot off the gat. Like, all this shit. It's so weird, but... Mm-hmm. So he rushes in to this office. He's holding his bloody wife. He says, there's an accident. And Steve, to your point about this is a movie that feels like it was sort of hucked up from the 90s. Here we go, dude. We are doing the freeze frame.
Yes.
What happened? Back up just a bit. Uh-huh. It explains their situation. But then who could have hit her with the car? Back up a bit to see. And it's just like enough already.
There's a lot of flashbacks to like 4 minutes before, which can get annoying after a while.
It very, you know, so it's like, oh.
For 10 characters, yes, it absolutely could.
Like we have a, because this is how you're being introduced to them. And it's like, okay. Oh, we got a flat. Why did we get a flat? Oh, we ran over a leopard print heel. Well, whose shoe could that be?
Yes.
And it cuts to Amanda Peet driving her car, which I guess Pruitt Taylor Vince's character, in some crevice of his mind, is a big Foo Fighters fan. Yeah. She's blaring All My Life. She's coming down the road.
I hadn't heard that song in a while. I was like, oh, that song's kind of a banger.
It's a rockin' Foo Fighters tune. Yeah. But so, like, that happened, and then she's like, she looks back and she's like, oh, did I forget something? And then like it jumps back to what she was doing before she got on the road, which is you see that she's a sex worker and she's got this dude tied up and she's giving this old timer a birthday cake, and it's like, okay, she robbed this old guy.
It's on his chest. Go ahead, Steve. I want to hear, you probably know all about this secret perversion.
Yeah, what's the technical term for this cake fetish, Steve?
No, that's just, you know, that's just cake play. That's easy. You don't even have to pay extra for that.
That's easy. You don't have to pay extra only if you bring your own cake, though.
She has
to provide it.
She's not going to the bakery, dude. Come on.
And you got to bring an extra jar of frosting, right? I bet, right?
Oh, wow.
Stuff gets a little, right? Where do you put that, Steve?
Right up your ass.
I like this. I like where this is going.
But her accent in this movie is in and out, and I don't think it has anything to do with her maybe being a figment of someone's imagination. She's like talking like this sometimes, y'all, and then like for most of it she's talking like regular Amanda Peet, which I
forgive, because that's just Florida for you.
Yeah.
Well, it's weird though. I mean, there is a Floridian accent that is not the same like hee-haw Yuckle Brothers shit that she's doing with this accent at some point. Like, the Floridian accent is not a Southern accent, but it's a voice of some kind, and like she doesn't come anywhere close to hitting it. But then the other time she's just talking like Amanda Peet, and it's like, just talk like Amanda Peet, because this other thing is nothing. Like, I don't know what this voice is.
Well, listen, this guy's mind, he's juggling a lot of people.
He's got a lot going on.
I forgot she sounded like that.
I mean, I feel like my person like would be like, it's all just like a bunch of nerds, the same nerd. Like, one is talking about The Simpsons and one is talking about comic books, and they look almost exactly the same.
Yep. Like,
that's... I would wake a judge up to kill you.
Just to make sure you die.
So you see, like, she opens the suitcase and she's driving in a top-down car. A bunch of shit starts flying out of the suitcase, so that's the shoe. Then it goes back to McGinley. Then this woman gets hit by the car, and it's like, well, who hit her with the car? Then it cuts back to Cusack driving this limo with a ridiculous Rebecca De Mornay.
Well, he's driving Rebecca De Mornay and Rebecca De Mornay's tits, who might have more dialogue than she does in the film.
I mean, holy moly, dude. Let's get some seatbelts on those guys, too, huh?
it's wild. Like, she's like the nasty actress lady, and like, she's got the world's worst. I mean, this old. Remember when you had a fucking a little antenna for your cell phone, man? That's that takes it back.
Oh, dude, every time Mulder and Scully whip out the antennas on their little cell phones on the X-Files, I'm like, oh, that's nice.
By the way, let's peep what she's been up to. Oh, my God. Peter 5'8 from 2024.
Oh,
with Kevin Spacey?
Yeah, that was return movie. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah.
She's kind of a never was, and that's a little unfortunate, because she, like, her big thing is Hand the Rock's Cradle, previous episode.
Yeah.
And I guess Risky Business, she's really big in, you know.
Oh, yeah. She's
in a bunch of stuff. Yeah, like Backdraft, you know.
I think she's a really good actress, actually, but she just never had it.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree.
Had that moment.
It's too bad.
Yeah, it is. Now she said this dog shit.
Yes, and she's like harassing John Cusack because she's like, oh, my phone battery died. Can you get out? This is crazy. Can you get out the backup battery that's in my bag up there?
And I would say yes, ma'am. Once I pull over to the side of the road because we're in a torrential downpour in Nevada, yep. And it might be at the end of the world. I'm not sure.
10 and 2, turn into the skid, get over to the side of the road, and then look for this dumb lady's cell phone battery. But as he's sifting through the bag, he, of course, is the guy who nails John C. McGinley's wife here.
Nice.
So then it sort of cuts back to like the present or whatever.
Well,
and
I want to quickly sure. She at DeMornay says don't help.
Yes.
You'll assume responsibility. It's also cool that you think about this. Like you start getting wrapped up in this movie, you kind of forget like, oh, Rebecca De Mornay, that's another personality.
Well, yes, exactly.
Yes. Like, yep.
Oh, man, when my father used to beat the shit out of me, I would pretend to be a failed actress to make the pain go away. I don't understand quite what this character represents.
A dream that's a little lower is more achievable, I think.
I guess so, yeah.
I always think about myself as a failed podcaster because it's attainable.
I think we also don't know, like, when each of these like things presented themselves.
Oh no, and, sure.
You know, like maybe it was a thing he was watching something like risque one night.
I see.
At this, he's like in his teens or something. He turns on the TV one night and he's like, oh my, would you look at that? And then his little brain like split off again, made the Rebecca De Mornay. Like he's watching, maybe it wasn't anything salacious. Maybe he was watching like Sunset Boulevard or something. It's just some story about a nasty actress.
God,
and he's like, I'll take one of those too. So we meet some of these characters here and then we get back to the motel and John Hawks is like, oh yeah, you know, you can lay the lady down here. De Mornay is acting like a real piece of shit to John Cusack. Because the other thing was they were on the road, we're told, because she got pissed off. The production for whatever movie was putting her up in an unacceptable hotel. And now she's pissed off that they got to stay at this lesser motel or whatever.
The circumstances in which everybody winds up in the motel, the secrets that they carry. It's just like, again, once you find out that no one actually exists, you're like, why do I give a shit? Why is it Ray Liotta just the cop that's driving Jake Busey? Who cares if he was a criminal first? What does that mean?
Because it's cool to look at. It's cool to look at, I guess.
I guess so.
The thing is, I think what they're trying to do, Steve, like something like Split, which I think is a better movie, is more contained. And
by far, yes.
I think they're trying to make it a real, wait, what? Because it is so expansive that you're like, it can't be that.
It can't be that.
I think that's the expectation it sets up. By the way, John Cusack is like, oh, I'm going to drive to the hospital to get an ambulance to come here.
Yes.
Why don't you drive her to the hospital?
Get in your fucking car.
You don't want blood on your seats? You don't want blood on your seats? A woman that you just hit on the side of the road, which is part of you as well. That road is also fake. That's also you.
We should also say that her son is mute or either chooses not to speak or isn't speaking or whatever.
John C. McGinley says that the kid hasn't spoken much ever since the father left. Mm-hmm. And John C. McGinley's just the stepfather, which makes it okay.
Yep. Exactly. Anything's possible.
It's in your mind. You're sort of allowed to do
that. Oh, you could definitely do a son swap in that scenario then.
Right. It's all mind play. So it's okay.
Oh, also to make it like a deep character.
Mm-hmm.
Cusack's what's his name, Jim, in this movie?
Ed.
He's reading Jean-Paul Sartre's Being and Nothingness. Man, this alternate personality is fucking deep.
Screenplay.
We also come to find, like in many, many great screenplay characters, is he used to be a cop. You know, one of these cops that got burned out by the system, seeing all that shit every day, decided to become a limo driver to the stars.
Honestly, right there is kind of a movie I'd watch.
I would absolutely
And then he gets pulled
that.
Back into like cop-related mischief because indeed, you know, one of his fares is fucking killed. Like he pulls over to a gas station and he's like, I got to go inside to get some cigarettes and then we'll be on our way, ma'am. And she's like, yeah, no problem. And then like Cusack comes back out after getting the stogs and then like she's dead in the car. And it's like, like, hell yeah, I'd watch that.
Oh, that trailer? I'd be one for limousine cop, please.
I would go a little more. Maybe the limo driver, you know, that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
Limousine cop lets you know exactly what you're buying, which I appreciate.
If he's the limousine driver, though, then that also sets up, like, he's not just an ex-cop, but that could be, like, hidden John Wick shit.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Oh, no, you fucking called the limo driver, huh? Ooh,
yes. Somebody walks out like, man, I thought the limo was the cop. Fuck this.
I would love
this. Wait a second.
Secret underground world of limousine drivers, right?
Absolutely.
Who have a natural war with the taxi drivers.
It's true.
Oh, whose brother was it? Oh, yeah. Oh, speaking of fucking Usual Suspects, when all the, remember when all the shit came out with Kevin Spacey and whatever, and there was that interview they gave with Kevin Spacey's brother, who's just some dude from, like, Colorado or something, where he's a limo driver / Rod Stewart impersonator.
Oh no.
Yes.
Wow. Yeah, dude, they had some photos of him. Gotta say, dude kind of looked like Rod Stewart.
I didn't know the talent was all over that family. That's amazing.
Dude,
congratulations.
Yeah, that guy just slid right into that role. But you know what? Here's the thing.
Lightning struck twice.
This guy, this limo driving Rod Stewart impersonator, no fucking sexual assault claims on that guy.
That's true.
That I know of.
To be fair, we haven't really looked into that.
So whatever. At some point here now, the limo is stuck in the water. He's pulled over. Cusack, that is, has pulled over to pick up Amanda Peet at this point. And we don't even see what happened. This is some bad editing. We don't even see what happens. The car is just in this washed out part of road. I guess to just show you, like, yeah, we can't get through that way. But, like, we saw that already from Amanda Peet. Like, she pulled up to it and then drove away herself. So we already saw this shit, but I guess they were like, well, people are really dumb, so we got to show, like, John Cusack drove right into this fucker, and the car's stuck. And this, here comes another car. This is more character introduction, because I believe right here's Clea DuVall and other guy.
Big time other guy.
Other guy as Lou. William Lee Scott is the actor.
Yes. And she's playing Ginny. Clea DuVall is... so then it's this other guy was the weirdo little guy in Gone in 60 Seconds with Cage, among other things. But so this is all right. Well, now we have to use your cell phone. I do like Cusack coming after this kid through the window, like, give me your fucking cell phone now.
Because he was being really nasty and bratty, and he just went in and grabbed him. He's like, we don't have a cell phone.
We should just say that, you asshole.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's when someone first says, can I borrow your cell phone? The response is not no. The response is, we don't have one.
It's really good that they made this in 2003. One of the last moments, maybe, that a wealthy adult would not have a cell phone. I didn't have one for many years after this as well, but I feel like a guy getting married in Las Vegas.
You want a
cell phone.
Yeah. What was your cell phone year? Do you remember?
I borrowed my parents in like 2004 when I was working in the city doing internships. And I didn't get a real deal cell phone till I think it was like 2006 because I had to get a job and you needed a phone line to get a job in America.
That was me too. Do you remember I used to have that long piece of paper, Andrew, that had everyone's phone number on it?
I sure do.
And I folded it up and I kept it in my wallet.
Yep. Yes. You were the only one that I knew at school who was always like, oh man, I got to pay my phone bill. And we'd be like, what? And you'd be like, yeah, the phone from the dorm. Like I use it to make calls. And we were like, what fucking time loop did you come out of?
I did that too throughout college. I did that. But, and when I graduated school, I bought a Motorola Razr and I thought I would never recover from this financial decision. I was like, what did I fucking do? I just signed my life away. That is a lot of money.
I was 2002 is like when I went to college, my parents were like, here's a phone. So if you get murdered, we can listen to it, I guess. Like, or, you know, whatever it was. It's like, all right. And it was a shitty, the little silver Motorolas that didn't flip or anything. And it was like the blue light buttons in the background.
That
or whatever.
That's a parent choice phone.
Yes.
That's exactly what I borrowed from my parents in 2004.
That's amazing.
I had the Razr too. That was also my first phone. I thought I was hot fucking shit. I'm like, this is the premier cell phone. You understand this? This flips. It is so thin. It's only like 9 inches wide.
Yeah. It's a R A Z R. Yeah, yes. Does it need the O or no, E or whatever not. It is?
Dude, you were looking cool as hell with your Razor phone, your Oakley sunglasses.
Yeah. And then I got drunk at the beer garden in Astoria, Queens, and it snapped in half. Whoops.
As those phones were known to do at the time.
But so we're here. We all go back to the hotel, and it's like, you know, we realize that we're not going to be able to get this woman out in time. And here comes another car with Ray Liotta and you want to know a movie set in 2000 made in 2003? Jake Busey is involved heavily. Yep.
This is around the same time I saw the film Tomcats in theaters, which I think he's also associated with.
Yep, Shasta McNasty was around here.
Oh, was Shasta McNasty a TV show?
It was indeed.
Yeah, that's something.
I got some catching up to do on Jake Busey.
Jake Busey, also a little after this, but not too far, was, I believe, the bad guy in Roadhouse 2 with Jonathan Scheck.
Ooh, nice.
Hell yeah. But yeah, so they come in, and what is going on with this Clea DuVall character? Right before Liotta rolls up, she's like, don't you guys feel that? Something, this place just got cold. Like,
yes.
I feel like there's another draft of this somewhere where this personality claimed to have psychic powers, and like, they kind of left two or three of those lines in the movie, but not the other 20 of them explaining this.
She also is the, you're right, she's always talking about the supernatural. She's talking about the Indian burial ground, and I'm like, get the fuck out of here.
So that personality was the one that was active in Pruitt Taylor Vince when he watched Poltergeist for the first time. The note we're supposed to take from that, maybe.
Now it's just movies he's seen. I think that's what Ray Liotta is, really.
That's
true. Dude, that's just he watched Copland.
He's like, oh, good movie.
But here we go. Ray motherfucking Liotta, man. Still cannot believe that this dude is gone. Like, I honestly, when he came up in the movie, like, I forgot. And in my head, the first thought, like, this, it was only a split second, but like, those quick mind wave thoughts. I didn't say it out loud or anything, but I was like, what's he been up to lately? Oh my God, he's dead. Like, And I was so bummed out for like 10 minutes, like not just because I was watching Identity, but because I fucking was reminded all over again that Ray Liotta passed away.
It's a bummer. Tough. It's because he's actually good in this too. You know what I mean? He's he's got that Ray Liotta presence that you want. You know what I mean? Like, and when he's lying, you're like, ooh, that guy's lying. You know what I mean? As opposed to like, it is also weird. Yeah, like everybody, even John Hawks. Like, what the hell happened to John Hawks, who is alive?
I don't know what he's been up to lately.
He was in that.
He was in True Detective.
That was his last thing. But that was like, that was the first time I've seen him in a while.
Which True Detective was? Oh, right. He was in the most recent one.
Yeah,
right, right,
Night Country. Yes.
Yeah. And that was pretty good. But the funny thing about that was, when he's on that, I was like, what the fuck's he been up to lately?
You're right. It's not like, not a super ton. I mean, the last thing I really remember him in on this list is Three Billboards.
And that's a couple years ago now. Sure. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that was fucking almost 10 years ago, that movie. That's an 8-year-old movie at this point.
He's a great little actor. So but so basically he's transporting a prisoner. Cusack's like, oh, can I use your radio? He's like, you can't, but I can. And you know, he keeps, you know, using, you know, trying, he's like, oh, the radio's dead, I can't get anything off of it, kind of.
Yes. Yeah. And Liotta is out of gas. That's why they rolled up here. He's out of gas or whatever. So Cusack like stitches this lady up, and you know, it's this weird like, well, when'd you learn to do that? And he's like, when I was standing right where you are, like to indicate like he's just winging it or whatever. Yes. And I feel like this is part of a thing where you should start as the viewer to suspect like something's amiss. Like, what do you mean this dude just sewed up this woman's horrendous neck wound we saw?
I mean, like, she'd be, if I tried, I'd be like, oh, there's her jugular. Sorry, folks. Oh, yeah. That's the ball game.
Her voice box fell out. Sorry, everybody. I tried to do surgery.
To be fair, he was already her killer. Might as well try. I've already killed her.
Finish the job.
Yeah. That's true. This is where McGinley's talking about the kid hasn't spoken much in 2 years. He's the stepfather, the bio father, left 2 years ago and had a quote little temper problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then right around here, Jake Busey's transported to room number 10 and he's handcuffed to the toilet. And now we'll come to find these room numbers will matter down the line.
Oh, they do. Oh. Well, no, they do and they don't, because
they do till they absolutely don't.
Just like everything in this movie. It matters. If you're watching the movie, yeah, it should matter. But no, not
right.
Really.
Right.
So we go to the laundromat, right? And we see, holy crow, what is that in the laundry machine? Well,
we do get a moment of Rebecca De Mornay. Like, she leaves, she's trying to get a bar of signal with her cell phone.
Yes.
And she kind of gets like, and that's the other problem too. Like, aside from John C. McGinley, who has a terrific death, most of the deaths are off screen because we're trying to keep the secret alive.
Sure, yes. Are.
And that's annoying because that makes the movie much less watchable. So like she turns around and she gets like just like ganked by someone. And then we go to the laundromat where her head is in the fucking dryer.
And this is a great, and then this is where Mangold comes in being a great director, right? Because like this scene is a great little bit of tension in like a real horror movie somewhere.
Sure.
Like, just not in this movie, but like, yeah, he goes in and it's like, oh, three dryers are running and one of them is making a clunking sound. And I really like the like Cusack opens door one. Mm. Okay, the pounding is still happening. Opens door two. Okay, the pounding is still happening. Must be this other one across the way. And like, there is this shot of that third dryer, like supposed to be, I guess, from Cusack's POV maybe, or just from his angle in general. And it's fucking menacing, man. Like, it really works. And then you remember almost immediately you're watching Identity.
Because I think then we just cut back to like the trial again, and they're just kind of going, because the trial kind of doesn't do anything until we finally get Pruitt Taylor Vince in there. But
we do get a brief moment that Jake Busey had escaped his toilet prison.
Yes,
and
because
then
like
we go to the trial,
right? Because Hawks comes in to see what's going on, and Leota's also investigating. This is Cusack throws out around here that he used to be a cop, and then the room 10 key is there, but that wasn't her room. That was Ray Liotta's room. And then it's a great Ray Liotta line where Cusack goes, "Where's your guy?" And Liotta, in the classic Liotta delivery, just goes, "He's cuffed to a toilet." Like, it's so fucking great. And then, he's definitely not. This cut to back to the trial room. This is where we're introduced to Holmes Osborne.
Oh, right.
And this is where we're introduced to the defense attorney, played by Dr. Levin from fucking Melrose Place.
Mustache-less, by the way.
Wow. Yeah, very weird. Yeah. I almost didn't recognize him without the Dr. Levin stash there.
That's great. He's fantastic. We got also the last role of, I want to say, what's this guy's name? Peter Coffin, or
the dude who played Officer Koharski in Wayne's World.
Frederick Coffin.
Frederick Coffin.
Yes.
Who now resides in go on.
If your last name is Coffin, it's a mandate you got to be cremated.
Yes, for sure.
You don't want anybody making those jokes.
Yeah, it's an awesome name, though. I might change my name to that.
I get it, Campbell. I get it, bacon pig police officer. That guy's so awesome.
I do like, there's this weird, and again, like, this movie is just littered with weird shit again, that it becomes meaningless once you realize that nobody actually matters. But like, John Hawks' character, somehow immediately, Amanda Peet is just dressed like a woman. She's wearing she's literally wearing like a jacket, jeans, and like, they're tight, but like, it was the 2000s. It was the style at the time. And he's like, "What are you, some kind of hooker? I don't rent rooms by the hour." And I'm like, we find out you're a fake fucking motel owner anyway.
Right.
Are you clocking this woman as a prostitute? She's wearing a tube top.
Wouldn't it make sense if like he had seen her working the motel before? And I know he's an imposter motel owner, but could you just like, I don't know, maybe he was there for a month and really gave us a shot. And he was like, "Oh God, I'm tired of cleaning up the cum and the blood."
Or, I mean, the other thing is, because yes, he is a fake motel operator, we learn, but maybe, because he doesn't know what's going on just yet, so maybe he's like, "Oh shit, I still have to keep up appearances as like a proud motel proprietor. What would I do? turn hookers away at every chance I got. So like maybe that's why. Also though, none of it matters because none of it's real.
Like that, there's that great moment when she's like, "You're not even looking at me. I don't like looking at trash."
Yes.
Oh, dude, come on.
Fuck yeah.
But yeah, so they make the big announcement. Caroline Suzanne, which is Rebecca De Mornay,
yes,
was murdered. And everybody freaks out. This is where John Hawkes, again, his hatred of sex workers, calls Amanda Peet a hoe.
Yes.
Just a straight up hoe.
Yeah.
Dude, a little guy like John Hawkes, that's whore, that's hooa, maybe. Yes. This guy can't be saying hoe.
It's tough.
You sound like a real dummy.
And she's like, "How dare you call me that? What are you doing?
I don't take orders from some professional slut," he says.
Yep.
I'm an amateur slut.
Oh, right this way.
Trying to make it to the majors.
Amateur sluts only.
We learn a little more about Lou and Ginny, the young couple. They were married only 9 hours ago in Las Vegas.
Because she told him that she was pregnant, and that's why they got hitched.
Right, so one of your personalities want to get married, and one of them wants to lie about a pregnancy.
And you know, as would one would, she tells him, and like we get this very like dark domestic drama for like 4 minutes. And again, like because it's James Mangold, it's pretty affecting.
Yeah.
Until you realize, like, wait, what am I watching here? You know what I mean? Like,
right. So there's a whole back and forth of kicking him out of the room, banging on the door. Meanwhile, Cusack sees all these defaced magazines, I think from Hawks, that are saying shit like slut, bitch, or whatever. So that's like a red herring. Everyone is a suspect we're trying to get into, even though you're sort of just setting up Jake Busey to be the killer, at least for now.
Because we said it like, hey, Cusack stumbles upon John Hawkes' like trailer or whatever, and it is like you said, filled to the wall with pornography. And then also he finds a knife holster, but the knife is not in it. Is the deal there?
Right.
But this Ginny and Lou scene. Yeah. I mean, like this much banging on a door. The fucking front of your movie better say directed by John Cassavetes.
Like, yes.
The utter screaming.
Yes.
That's going on in this domestic fight here. And it's this whole thing. Like she says, like, "Oh, I only lied about being pregnant because my friend said she saw you at the Hawk with," quote, "that fucking girl."
Uh-huh.
There's way too much here, man. Like for a movie about a bunch of alternate personalities hanging out in a motel, like this is their own movie. And don't try to get me involved with it at this
point. I guess, like, you know, if you're death row, you got a lot of time. Like, well, where would they go? Well, maybe it's a cool place called the Hawk. Maybe at the Hawk. Drinks are three for a dollar. That sounds pretty cool. Uh-oh.
Absolutely.
Better not bring that slut to the Hawk.
They got cheese puffs at the bar. You fill out the world, you know?
That's true.
You're getting the shit kicked out of you. You're just like, "Oh, man, I'm just here at the Hawk having a beer."
Well, the Hawk always has really big musical acts coming through. This is fantastic.
It's kind of like the Bang Bang Bar from Twin Peaks. Eddie Vedder here at the Hawk.
Fuck yeah, dude. You wouldn't believe the lineup of people that went through that small Twin Peaks bar.
Oh, dude, yes. The Foo Fighters were there. Taylor Vince tells it right.
But the whole like John Hawkes knife thing comes back here because Ginny emerges and from her bathroom here.
Yeah, she escapes out the window because someone is banging on the door.
She opens it and she sees the shadow of a knife.
Yes.
That's all I was trying to say. We come to find that Lou has been stabbed to death there as well.
And he's murdered, and he has got a 9 next to him. I believe we're at 9 here with 9 personalities here.
Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah.
And when we find out who the killer is, it's even worse because we'll just do it. It's the little kid. Apparently, it's the little kid the whole time.
The little kid personality, right?
Yes, the little kid personality is killing the other personality.
Yes. Okay. Which is like, I thought at the ending, then he would maybe be reformed because we're told that he had all this trauma as a child from seeing grisly murders. And I feel like he was just reliving them and maybe now he could get beyond them, but that's not the case anymore.
No, I watched the movie Problem Child when I was a kid and that junior was a real handful.
Oh yeah. Here, John Hawkes, have some of this lemonade I'm selling.
Could you at least imagine Gilbert Gottfried then if you were watching Problem Child?
Absolutely.
Give me some of that energy.
Dude, that would be amazing if it's just like this really serious, dumb movie, and then just Gilbert is like the 10th God.
I would love that.
Because I'm your anxiety! Like, that would make some fucking sense.
Yes,
you know
that's
what I
funny.
Mean?
Like, that's like a Pixar thing, right?
Exactly.
There.
It is. It's very close to a Pixar thing.
By the way, Gilbert Gottfried, friend of the show, dearly departed. Go look up our interview with him. It's a great guy.
That's right. That's right. Around here, speaking of red herrings, she's crying in the parking lot about Lou. And it's like, all right, where's that fucker you've been hide or chained to the toilet there? We cut to Jake Busey, who's like running through a field. And we've made one mention of across the way, there's a diner. And so Jake Busey, you see, like, he sees it in the distance. We can see that it's very far away. He runs to this diner. And then I feel like what happened here was we're writing this screenplay. We get to the part where Jake Busey looks out the diner window and all of a sudden he's magically back on the property of the motel. And then what happened was we did a control S. We saved the draft. The screenwriter went on vacation, came back 2 weeks later, forgot what he'd set up there, and then just kept writing the movie.
It doesn't, again, like, that's a cool thing. And like, unless you know that there's like something otherworldly going on here.
Precisely.
But
and
it's not.
Never comes up again.
It's amazing. Well, I mean, it's because he can't leave because it's all in the same head, yada, yada, yada. But to your point, yes, it is just sort of like, where was I? So Jake Busey, he's just, they caught him, right? They caught him? I think.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, just read back through your own draft. No, that won't be necessary. I'll take it from you. Excuse me. I wrote and directed 2 Jack Frost movies. I know what's going on. But because he just goes, like, Jake Busey looks out the window of this diner that we can clearly see is supposed to be like 100 yards away from the motel. And we looks out the window. He sees Ray Liotta in the, you know, foyer or the front part there of the motel. And he just goes, what the hell? And then Ray Liotta just starts beating the shit out of him.
Well, we should say also it's kind of great because the point of Jake Busey's character, he's a red herring of a red herring of a red herring, because he's also a red herring of, at this point in the movie, you're like, oh, someone is transporting whomever Malcolm Rivers is to the trial that we're watching.
Yes. Yeah.
And you assume that that is Jake Busey because you're watching a movie. You know what I
Correct.
Mean? Like,
yes.
Because you haven't seen Peter Pruitt Taylor Vince. You're like, oh, and then like when he gets killed, then they're like, yeah, it's actually Pruitt Taylor Vince. Don't worry about it. You know what I mean? Like, it's just sort of like, it's just, again, red herring upon red herring.
Yeah,
and it's too much fish for my taste, honestly. Like, you know what I mean? Like, let's get some fucking cream cheese in here or something.
It's way too much fish. But yeah, to that point, we keep on stretching out these what ifs, you know, like, because Jake Busey gets tied up for real now, and he's telling John Hawks, like, what do you got in there? You could tell me. I'm good at keeping secrets. I've got a whopper myself.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
That secret is not that he knows that they're all the same people. Like, what is that?
The secret is that Ray Liotta and him are jail buddies.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah.
Because that's an afterthought.
That's such a brief moment, but it's a good one for no reason, though.
But that's what's insane about, like, the decisions with this screenplay, because, like, you have the big twist that's given with 20 minutes left of the movie.
Sure.
All of these people are fake. But inside the world, there's also, like, twists, because it's like, Ray Liotta was actually also a prisoner, and it was a double prisoner transport, and they killed the guy, and Ray Liotta's pretending to be a cop. Like, okay, that's the one thing. And then at the end of the movie, when it's like, oh, Amanda Peet isn't the last one, and he's not saved, and here's this little kid as the killer.
Yeah.
And then, like, you've got on the outside, he's doing a fucking Michael Myers thing. Like,
yes, it's too much.
It's just too much.
Well, no, because here's the thing. There's just a lot of time in prison. When you're doing your laundry, you're like, well, maybe the prison transfer goes wrong, and actually he's one of the other guys turns into the cop. And you know what that car was owned by? It was owned by Ernie Hudson just a couple years earlier. He gave it up. Oh, yeah, just had a bad transmission, but Ernie Hudson just wouldn't bring it to the dang mechanic.
I thought it was going to be owned by John Voight.
Like, just, I mean, like, go
on. Liotta himself is also set up as a red herring, because you see at one point him in his room where he's putting a jacket back on, and you see the shirt that he's wearing, and there's a fucking hole in it with blood around it.
Yes.
So you're like, oh, what's going on there? And boy, sure as shit, it doesn't matter none to this movie.
We keep cutting back to I should give her her actual name, which is
Layla Kenzel.
Layla Kenzel, who is dying. Eventually, she just fucking passes away. I mean, like, you know, everyone kind of goes by, like, "Hey, how you doing, hon?" And like that, not long for this world. She's just gonna die.
It's pretty something. Slow. One of my personalities slowly bleeds out on a sofa.
That is.
Did you ever watch Mad About You? I kind of had a thing for Richard Kind's wife on that show. What if she was one of my identities? Ooh, what if she was slowly dying?
Oh yeah, I just want to watch Fran from Mad About You bleed out on a motel bed.
Ooh. I often think of sitcom actors being hit by cars, so I get it.
Cusack, at some point, by the way, gives a big thing about why he left the force, and it's like there was a jumper who jumped because he hesitated when she was like, "Give me a reason to live." Okay, that's fine. He finds the room 9 key in Lou's dead hands.
Yes. Could I say a little bit about that? Like, the reason why, well, they talk about this when he's taking photos of the crime scene and he explains how he used to be a cop. But the jumper, the suicide jumper, was this pregnant girl riddled with AIDS?
Exactly.
And asked me if I should buy. If why should I bother continue to live? And I hesitated.
Dude, what? He says, "I couldn't think of a single optimistic thing to say to her, so she spread her arms and jumped."
Uh-huh. I mean, it's like, and again, the extreme. This is in the butterfly effect part of the video story. Yes.
Yep. Yep, exactly.
Oh, yeah, she's got AIDS and she killed herself, but actually none of that happened because it's all fucking fake anyway.
Yeah, and you know, that means her fake baby had a tumor.
And then, you know what, there's not even time to grieve for sweet Lou, because all of a sudden you just get, "Larry, you motherfucker!" And what is going on? But Jake Busey has a baseball bat jammed down his throat and is also dead.
Okay, I need to see this little kid. Like, if at the end of the movie you're going to tell me that the little kid did it, I need like a 4-minute scene of like, come on.
Totally. Jake Busey's just like, "You're not going to do it. You're too small."
Now, if I get a running jump.
Yeah, dude, he's fucking like hopping his little ass on it, like trying to push it down his throat a little farther. It just is ridiculous. And also, this is, if you notice in the credits, somewhere towards the end, it's like, puppetry work by Greg Nicotero.
Oh, okay.
This is a Greg Nicotero production right here, man. This Jake Busey puppet. And if you were to believe the IMDb trivia about this shit, someone from the movie, so the apocryphal IMDb trivia nug tells you, someone from the movie was like, "Man, Greg Nicotero, this is pretty fucking sweet. Can I take this work of art home?" And they're like, "Yeah." And they put it up in their office or whatever. And then one night, a cleaning woman saw it and freaked out. And the production company got rid of it the next day.
Now, somebody found themselves, a Jake Busey real doll, what I've always wanted.
Yeah, totally. Let me fucking teeth fuck this guy. Let's do it.
Well, that mouth is very spreadable, we see.
It is.
How do you kill someone shoving a baseball bat down? Like, how does that even work? How can anyone do that?
Aside from Jason Voorhees, I have no idea.
Exactly.
Or like maybe a Michael Myers type, dude, which I guess we're trying to set up with this little fucker.
But maybe, man, there should be a personality that is just Michael Myers.
Exactly. That would be kind of cool if it's like, "Oh yeah, then my biggest personality is Michael Myers."
Yeah, because I saw that movie and it was awesome.
Oh, but actually, Michael Myers, he got his jumpsuit from a guy who died of AIDS, if you knew that. I got a lot of time in prison. How'd he get his shoes? I don't know. We'll talk about that for a while.
Well, flashback to 5 minutes before to show how Michael got his shoes.
We are, because everybody's screaming at John Hawks in this moment because they're convinced that John Hawks did it because it was his baseball bat that he'd been, you know, threatening with earlier. And I love, because his name's Larry. And it just reminded me of the "You're killing your father, Larry" scene from Lebowski, because everyone is screaming Larry. And it's just because like Leota and Cusack are really giving it to him. And it's like, "What were you even doing outside, Larry? Is this your key, Larry? Larry?
I went to get something. I went to get something for a second. I didn't do it." And they also find that he has the actress's wallet, which had tons of money in it. And pro tip, okay? take the money out of the wallet.
Yeah, that's right. You don't need that whole thing.
No, you don't need that.
If you want to grab a couple of credit cards for your trouble, go right ahead. But you don't need the whole fucking bag, dude. No. That's stupid. Right.
That's just exactly. Pure evidence.
But at
funniest
this
part of the movie is happening right here.
Oh, please go ahead.
Because he's like, Larry's freaking out because everyone's screaming Larry. And he takes out a knife and he puts it to Amanda Peet's throat. And is like, I'm telling you, I didn't do anything. I'll cut her. Get away from me. Whatever. She fights back and pushes him. They go flying. They knock open a freezer.
Yes.
And this fucking body fell out, man. Like, this body falls out of the freezer. And everybody is like, what the fuck is going on? And Larry, big action moment here for Larry, tries to race away with his truck and slams right into John C. McGinley crushes this man against a freezer.
Because he's about to kill the kid by accident. He's just driving around. The kid's in the road. He goes, eek, and takes a right and just nails McGinley, which you do get to see, and it's a mangled thing, so it looks pretty good, damn good.
It's good. And the kid sees it and is like, you can see, like, oh no, not now this kid is, everyone in his life has been murdered or whatever.
Yes.
But had he hit the kid, the rest of these identities could just live in harmony.
yeah, I guess that's right. If he had just veered a little bit to the right instead, damn. But this is where we cut back to the hearing. This is where Dr. Levin is like defending that his client's not crazy, and this is where we meet Pruitt Taylor Vince. Yes. Like the meeting is brought to a stop right as Alfred Molina's talking, or he's introduced as being hired to study his quote fractured psyche. Here he comes in a wheelchair, getting wheeled into the courthouse or whatever,
and it's like, oh yeah, because none of this is allowed at trial. Like, there's like notebooks upon notebooks of him being crazy, and like, it's a perfectly reasonable defense. Like, why? What? When did? What did his lawyer do at that time?
Well, I don't understand why they're. I guess because the whole thing, it's, they're leaning towards a, the cops are intentionally withholding stuff so it doesn't look like he's crazy, so we can zap this dude.
Sure.
And the funny thing is, with that part, that's a thing that's actually happening in the real world, and the movie still doesn't give a shit about it.
No, of course not. That's an actual thing that's actually happening.
That should be another twist. That all the judge, Molina, they're all just in his head.
Because everybody. No, they're
we pan out to Earth and it disappears because it was all in his mind.
It's somebody else's mind, basically. It's like you go to John Malkovich or something. You know what I mean? Like,
Malkovich.
And then it backs out farther, and it's that talking pug from Men in Black.
Exactly. I got a lot of time on my hands. I got a big imagination.
Exactly. This is John Hawks. And he gets to do some John Hawksing here, which is nice. He's doing some good acting, where he gives his little fake backstory where he's like talking about how he lost everything in Vegas. He was on, you know, he's broke. He's driving through the desert, pulled in here, running out of gas, and he finds the manager dead in a microwaved pot pie, he says, just sitting at the desk. So this dude, in order to try to make some money, I guess, to get back up on his feet or whatever, yes, he starts accepting guests into the hotel and just taking their money. We have heard him say earlier in the film repeatedly to them when they're checking in, like, cash only. And it's this whole, all I could think about, because they're like, well, what did you do after that? And he's like, well, then more and more customers kept coming in. All I could think about was when Kramer's telling that story about the bus, and Jerry's like, you kept making all the stops? Well, they kept ringing the bell. It's like, just say you're closed.
Go away. Like,
and by the way, this the frozen body that he shoved, either the body he puts in the freezer, this is Stuart M. Besser cameo, the producer, the executive producer of the film, produced tons and tons of stuff.
That's fun.
Scream, Vampire in Brooklyn, Dr. Giggles, among them.
Whoa, prolific as fuck.
Oh, yeah. Since we're talking about the IMDb trivia, there's actually one piece of IMDb trivia which lists the body count as 14, which is actually incorrect, because the body count's fucking zero.
That's right.
Yeah. Yep, you're right.
It's a fucking fantasy. It's a fantasy.
It's one. It's Molina at the end.
Oh, yeah, that's fair. Molina does get murdered. And you know what? This is exactly what, you know, that bullshit, like, all those, like, readings of movies of, like, oh, you know, like, the end of Breaking Bad, actually, Walter White just died in his car. This is what...
Right.
This movie is what everybody wants, apparently.
And look how stupid it turns out.
Exactly. Like, actually, yes, it was all in his mind the whole time, and nothing actually happened. And guess what? That's worse than things actually happening.
Yep, exactly. Exactly. Also, like, what is that desire?
Right? I have no
like,
idea.
What is that desire to, like, and I think it's a thing where it's, like, because you're watching it wrong the whole time, you're,
yes,
like,
you're the smart not- one.
Well, you're not wanting him to die, right? Like, yeah, you're watching it wrong. You think Walter White is, like, some sort of, like, hero, even at, like, his most Heisenbergian evil, right? And then it's like, oh, well, if I can just say, like, here's the cutoff before he turned into a big bad man, then he can still be awesome and whatever.
I think,
you know,
people
what I mean?
people just like to feel smart, or like, yes, oh, that's a clever thought I had or read, and like, oh, that makes you think, and then they move on with their lives.
Because I'm trying to think of something. It happened sometime this year with a movie where there's a significant amount of people like, oh no, actually it's his death dream.
It was Tar. People thought Tar was in her mind.
Exactly. Which
the whole movie?
Yes.
What is wrong with people?
They had the thought what she was always, was she never made it or at all, yes, to begin with. She was still the living girl at the house when she visits the parents' house or whatever.
You want every movie to be identity. Congratulations. Yes.
Right.
That
you
would
just
suck.
Found, if you're one of these people, we just found your new favorite movie. It's James Mangold's Identity.
And I saw there were some prominent podcasters who thought that Tar theory was real. And I was just like, no.
That's bonk town, man. No one's trying to pull the wool over your eyes like Identity, all right?
Well, no, exactly. And if they are, they will tell you at some point, as opposed to just having it be a real regular movie. So whatever. Now Hawks is tied up. Clea Duvall brings up the Indian burial ground situation.
Maybe it's the burial ground, and fucking Cusack's like, what are you talking about, Clea Duvall? That certainly sounds like something from a different movie.
And she kind of goes through it, like, apparently the US government moved all these dead bodies around, and like, okay, great. And this is
where they bring up, because now we're all like consolidated in the room.
Yes.
And Ray Liotta's like, no one's leaving or whatever. And this is Clea Duvall again. She asks what this is sort of like structurally based on. They don't say it, I feel like, because the finger thing, yes, means the money.
Uh-huh.
But she's like, did anybody see that movie where a bunch of people arrive on an island and they all die and they realize that they're all sort of linked to each other? And she's talking about Agatha Christie's 10 Little Indians, which I believe the original
No. We won't be saying that.
No, no. But I'm just saying, I believe it was much more racist than that.
I think it goes by "And Then There Were None," which is like the cool title, which I'm sure Agatha Christie in her cold racist hands couldn't stand.
Yeah. Well, we're glad.
No, I know what that's called. It's called. No, that's it.
Mm-hmm. Well, now she resides in hell.
Exactly.
But so because we're thinking about 10 Little Indians, she's like, oh, maybe there's like some connection between us all. So then we start, you know, talking about like where we're from. This is where you get all the fucking Amanda Peet is from Florida and she's driving back there. Yada, yada, yada. I do like John Hawks being like, yeah, I'm from that town too. Why are you going back to Florida exactly?
She's giving it all up. Sex work was not for her. And it's time to grow, have an orange grove. There you go.
Dude, hell yeah. She's like, I'm going to grow like fucking oranges and limes and stuff. And I'm like, yeah, citrus farm. Fuck yeah. let's go, dude. Work on toil of the fields all day. Take some limes back, you know, make a cocktail or three at the end of the day.
Sounds very romantic, but you know, most of that's you're chasing snakes with a rake.
I mean, yeah.
Yeah, it's not the glamorous farming life I'm thinking of.
And then you go to the fucking, you know, the farming store, and I was like, where are you going, shitty girl? It's like, all right, I get it.
Yeah. Okay.
And they're like, this, what do you mean charging money for them oranges? They should be free. They should be free.
Those oranges should be free, you socialist. Yes.
We voted for them to be free, which is not socialism.
So boy oh boy, yeah, this is around the same time they just find this woman dead in the bed. You get Liotta is like, hey Ed, she's dead, kind of great.
Mm-hmm.
This kid starts crying as Ray Liotta on the floor next to this dead woman finds key number 6.
Yes.
And they're like, wait a second, We were on 8. Where's 7?
Right. And they said, well, it doesn't make sense. She died in an accident. And they're like, well, George got killed in an accident. So they go out to inspect the truck, right?
Yes. And they find Keith.
Dude, this is hysterical. I mean, I'm not saying you got to bury the guy. But you just left his mangled corpse stuck between the truck and the ice machine?
What do I have? The jaws of life in my back pocket?
No, you know what? You do have the reverse pedal.
Yeah, totally. Why don't we try backing that up a little bit?
Let that corpse settle on the ground.
This must have been a miserable shoot because they keep coming in and out, every character, into the rain, into the pouring rain. And you know, like... Someone's like, sorry, Mr. Cusack, got to do it to you. Like, do you have? Yeah, I do. Got to do it to you one more time. Sure. Just dump this bucket of water over your head. Now
dude.
Say your line.
No kidding. I mean, between like the pneumonia and the athlete's foot.
Yes.
No thanks, man. No thanks.
Apologies, Miss Pete. This brings me no sexual pleasure to douse you with water once again.
Sort of sounds like it when you mention it.
Can't you at least warm this water up before you're dumping it on us?
Oh, no.
We don't have hot water money on this here production. So there's a freak out here where Cusack is like, all right, everybody is getting killed here. I want you guys to go in the car. And just he tells Amanda Pete, like, just you, Ginny, Cleo Duvall's character, and little Timmy here.
Yes.
You just drive up and down the road, drive until you can't drive anymore, and then turn around and drive the other way. Because at least if you're not in this motel, maybe you won't die.
Sure.
Ray Liotta doesn't get too hip to that, but it doesn't matter because Cleo Duvall and this little kid get in the car
and
it just blows up.
Just explosion.
Like the fucking mafia was there,
which is fantastic. And then, like, they're like, well, how the hell did that happen? And then the stupidest part of this movie, they go there and there's no bodies. Like, there's got to be some kind of body. And then we go to every single body that we've already discovered. Like, well, that body isn't there. That body isn't there. We go all the way back to the goddamn dryer. And it's like, well, where did her head go? I'm like, good Lord, I don't care.
This is where I'd definitely be like, oh, man, I know for a fact that people in my party here have been killed. I've seen the evidence of the corpses and now they're missing. We got ourselves a Jason Voorhees on our hands.
Sure.
Here. This is Michael Myers' handiwork. Like nobody's business cleaning up after himself like this.
But then instead of suspecting Jason Voorhees, we start to compare each other's birthdays to what else do we have in common? Every single person's birthday is May 10th.
Oh,
spooky.
Dude, this is right after Amanda Pete's been doing some I Still Know What You Did Last Summer screaming.
Yes.
Because she gets frustrated with everything and she just runs out into the rain and is like, what the fuck do you want from us? Yeah. It's totally Jennifer Love.
And did we mention, I guess, Ginny exploded or whatever?
Yeah,
she's in the car with the kid.
Cusack
has that line where they're like, oh, well, maybe somebody says like, oh, maybe they were just incinerated, to which Cusack, because he's the grizzled old cop, is like, no, even if that happened, there'd be pieces left.
Oh, yeah. This life. They probably had AIDS, too.
A Mexican woman probably committed suicide in the car. That's what happened.
Stay back from that car that's got those flames have AIDS. Fire AIDS are coming out of there.
This world. Oh, boy.
And then Cusack starts putting together right here sort of on his own. Like, the power starts getting funky.
Yeah.
And he's like... saying the names of all the people, like he's reading the driver's licenses and it's like Ed Dakota, Paris, Nevada, that's Amanda Pete and so on. And then he starts reciting the Pruitt Taylor Vince, I saw a man at the top of the stairs or whatever the fuck that thing is.
Who wasn't there, he wasn't there again today. I wish he would go away.
Yes. I didn't type it all out, so thank you.
And then what we get, the twist happens now. We still got
am I speaking to right now?
We still got movie left, but here's the twist. John Cusack is wheeled out for this judge and this court proceeding thing.
Yeah.
Like he wakes up in the seat that we've seen Pruitt Taylor Vince like already sitting in.
Wait, what?
Yes.
There
it is. And much like me, every morning he looks in the mirror and says, what'd you do with my face?
Yes. Yeah, could you imagine, like, looking in the mirror and just having to see a big old fat guy? Oh, wait, I can't.
Oh, God. Well,
What a horror.
Maybe I'm a pretty girl named Paris, Nevada. How about that?
But yeah, so like Alfred Molina is like, what happened at the motel? And he tells him everything that's going on. And then this is where Molina, and you got to get someone like Molina to do sure. this because it's terrible. Like, you know, there's no screenwriter in the world that could make this sound not stupid. So you need like a good actor to sort of help it rise above the stupidity. And Molina is like a good example of like, well, it's dumb, but
yeah, exactly.
he's making it sound a little sure. better.
Cause he's got the accent, baby.
Yes, exactly. And
just, yeah, it's like
you, Edward, you are one of his personalities.
And he says, this is an experimental therapy procedure that I put you in, wherein all of your personalities will fight each other and one will remain. That's like, wait, that is a real, when did that happen? Because that's not in the movie. Like,
well, I'll tell you what, if there were ever a time for a flashback, which yes. this movie is not opposed to, yeah, like yeah. here we go.
I would love it. It's like, oh yeah, if you take this drug, it'll make you a little more hallucinogenic and be susceptible. And it's like, you're in a hotel. Hey, I just read it. Then there were none, and then you know, you'll right. get it.
yeah, you'll get it. I do love the freak out though, where because it cuts back to Pruitt. This is actually, again, I feel like this is some Mangold goodness here, where it's Cusack, and then like Molina holds up this mirror and Cusack looks at it, and it's Pruitt Taylor Vince yes. in the reflection. And then he goes to look at the window, sees Pruitt Taylor Vince, and then it cuts back and Pruitt Taylor Vince is in the chair. Like
yes.
that's all actually technically really well done. But like when he's back as Pruitt Taylor Vince, he just screams, I live in Hollywood.
Yes, I have an apartment in Hollywood. No, you don't.
Oh God, it's so fucking funny. But yes, reducing the number of identities because this personality is going around killing everyone and he's got to figure out. He needs his help to rat out the killer and get the identity of him.
If that's the case, I want him to go through the whole fucking menagerie. You know what I mean? I want him to do like, I yep. can't wait to get another role in my yeah. dying film career. Ooh, I'm a sexy lady. Look at my big tits. I'm a nervous guy. I'm such a nervous driver.
Holy shit, I just figured out how you could make this movie a little less stupid, possibly. Okay. Bear with me. It starts Cusack and Molina together, like they're in some office. And what's going on is Cusack is still a cop, and Molina's like, here's the deal. Here's this guy. He explains the whole thing, right? But what we need you to do, John Cusack, like we have all this information about you, your personality, whatever, your history. We're going to plant you in his head, like make him susceptible so that like his brain creates a John Cusack personality,
cool.
right? So it's yes. like, it's the cop personality, all yes. the cop skills and everything like that. And he's like, and now we will send your personality as part of it into him. He won't know any better. And you will use, you yes. know, your detective skills to root it out. At least that way, then like from the jump, John Cusack is like this dude undercover in this guy's mind, trying to root out who it is. And that way we can see him do detective work. It's not all this big mystery thing.
Right, a little Inception-y. That's nice.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
It would be a nice like way to make that like that again. That's a cool flat. That's the flashback. You know what I mean? Like when this
right,
happens,
yes.
and yep. then you're like, oh wow, this kind of. And then actually, the last 20 minutes has some agency because you're kind of rooting for the John Cusack.
And then exactly. And instead, he's like, he just starts freaking out again. And Molina's like, okay, like you're going back to the motel now. Remember what I told you.
Which
remember what I told you.
Like, and this is like. There's your twist. That should be towards the end. The fact that we go back to this motel and then have a flashback of Ray Liotta
yep.
escaping. Yeah. He was also a prisoner with Jake Busey, and he stabs the cop that's transporting them, pulls over the car, puts on his clothes, hence the stab wound in the coat.
I have ceased to care. That yep, had
exactly,
to happen.
Exactly.
That has had to happen before this twist.
Yes. Exactly.
Now I just do not care anymore
there's,
because it's not real.
What's the... There's you could have easily moved that up in the movie.
Yes, exactly. It just
yeah. No, it's just it's 1000% bad editing. Like there's no we should not be having any bullshit flashbacks after the twist of this is revealed because why on God's green earth would anyone give a shit that Ray Liotta killed that cop? Because we
cop.
Were just told
yeah.
he was a fucking figment of this dude's imagination or an alternate personality, whatever you want to fucking call it. It does not matter.
I mean, when we were caring about trying to solve the mystery of who's killing who, if you put that flashback earlier, then you're like, oh shit, it's probably Ray Liotta.
Exactly.
Exactly.
But now
and
you
instead,
put it after the twist and it's just like, what are we doing?
You got to do that flashback when we, the audience, see the hole in his shirt.
Yes.
Because the film It's not like a blink and you miss a thing. The film very clearly is like, look at the hole in his shirt. So we look at the hole in his shirt. You make a little flashback whoosh sound. You see this Jake Busey flashback with him. But again, we can't do it there because they're so obsessed with like keeping the red herring on Busey maybe. So it's like, why would we give that up before the last 15 minutes of the movie, I guess? I don't know. It's really dumb. But around here, John Hawks gets killed by Ray Liotta, who's like looking for car keys or something to get away. Hawks bashes Liotta in the head with a fire extinguisher, which is also kind of nice.
Yes, and he's trying to save Amanda Peet because, like, you know.
Yeah.
That's it, right? Yeah, Hawks is gone now, too.
Yeah, Hawks gets killed right here, and we get a little like Ray Liotta, Amanda Peet, cat and mouse, and Cusack comes back at this point and confronts Ray Liotta. They have their sort of shootout here, their fucking high noon moment here out in the front of the motel. And like, I do actually like Cusack in this moment. He is playing it that his character does have new information.
Yes.
Because he just sort of like coldly comes up and pumps like five bullets into Ray Liotta. Like, Liotta gets one off on him, but he shoots the shit out of this guy.
Which spoilers for the trivia. When Ed shoots Rhodes at the end of the movie, you can see Rhodes mouth the words, "I didn't do this," and Ed replies, "I know," neither of which are audible in the movie because they took the dialogue out because the director felt it would make it too obvious that Rhodes was not the killer, thus making the true climax less surprising. No one cares about who the killer personality is.
No, not at all.
That does not matter anymore. It's actually to your point, Andrew, like, that actually makes him this avenging weird personality thing.
Right.
That's a little more striking and cool, at least.
Mm-hmm. You know, this is what you do. You put the twist after the shootout. Like, you're like, oh shit, they're both dying or whatever. And then he's wheeled out.
Yes.
That proceeding. And then you're like, oh shit. Yeah. And you could keep the dialogue. I didn't do this. I know, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. No, exactly. Exactly. And like when Ed is dying right here, you know, she goes, because she's saying to him, like, where did you go when you left? Which I guess we don't see that either, but I guess the Cusack personality just vanished from the world.
Yes.
And then, because when he does come back into it, he's very far away from the motel we see.
Yeah.
Like, he comes back into the world, like, on the other side of the road. But she's like, when you left, where did you go? And he goes, or what did you see when you left? And he goes, I saw you. I saw you in an orange grove. And, like, you could have the transition right there because we see Pruitt Taylor Vince, it cuts to him and he's saying the same thing. You know, he's saying
an
Orange Grove, and the tear comes down his face. It's a little later, but like, that is how you could do it, where it's like, that's your reveal, and then, oh my god, there's 2 minutes left of the movie, not 17.
Yes.
You know what I mean? And then you're in and you're out. You robbed that bank, baby. You left everyone in the theater going, wait, what? Well, and then credits are rolling.
No, but you have to give Amanda Peet an Academy Award losing performance here. Like, what have you? Where'd you go? Come on, I'm gonna bring you to a hospital. Pick yourself up, damn it! And I'm like,
oh right.
Neither of these people are real. I do not give a shit.
Right, but then now we go back to that court thing, right? And he's put in the care of Melina. His execution's been
stayed.
Yeah.
Also, does the movie believe it would be better to kill him or not? You know what I mean? Like, what is this movie's position on the death penalty in this way? Because he does trick them here, right? Like, that's the twist
that's
of the ending.
See, that's the thing, right? Is if it doesn't have that, the message is the day is saved. A mentally ill man wasn't executed and he's just going to go live in a care facility and that's the end of it.
Yes.
But because they're driving down the road and then we have the back inside, which we can just talk about because it's right here. We go back inside the world and Amanda Peet gets to the orange grove and she's doing some farming and this little disgusting shit boy comes out of nowhere with, I believe it's a hoe, funny enough, the gardening equipment. And this little kid's like, you fucking whore, like whatever he says.
He says, whores don't get second chances.
Oh, and, right.
And which is kind
Come
of,
on.
I mean, like, and you
is that you, Larry?
He says it and then Pruitt Taylor Vince says it, so it's like, oh wow. And then like he stabs her in the back and then meanwhile Pruitt Taylor Vince in reality chokes out Alfred Molina and somehow subdues this other guy, I guess. That's easy to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, there's the other. See, that's the other thing, right? You got Alfred Molina, but then you got ambulance driver or van driver guy. It is a massive LOL, though, because, like, when the reveal happens, it's she's like, tra-la-la, like, doing some gardening. And she's like, oh, what's this in the dirt? And she pulls out the final motel room number one key. And she's like, what? And then when it's like revealed, like, here's little kid Timmy, there is just a montage of this kid and you see him briefly killing all the people. Fuck, that's funny. This kid was auditioning for The First Omen.
And I mean, like, also, like, so Lou, you're yelling at your wife. You're trying to bang this fucking door down. This little shit boy comes in. I'm punting this kid into the next county.
Totally. This kid got the drop on you. I mean, the Jake Busey one is impossible. But I mean, come on, Lou.
And I mean, again, who in the audience cares that it's the little kid versus Ray Liotta versus whatever? They're all, none of them matter. They're not real people.
Yeah. And then the last thing you hear is just the kid is whispering. You're seeing the van sort of slowly drive off the road and the kid is whispering the, I wish you'd go away.
Yes.
And boom, that is the end of Identity. And me in 2003 in the theaters just went, oh man, yeah, my fucking dumbass 22 we years ago leaving that theater. Can't wait to buy this on DVD.
Yes, and to that point, it's okay to like a movie, and I can see elements of what people would like about this, yourself included, as a young child. But
young pup.
I will say that actually, it's kind of funny because all of the movies that we're doing in this Wait What You Airy are all about the same time. Donnie Darko is probably one of the... Is maybe the same year as this or so, or maybe
it's like 2001, maybe. Maybe a one even.
Yes, but like, and then, you know, next week's episode, Vanilla Sky, that's like 2001. You
2001
know what I mean?
2001 is Donnie Darko.
Yes.
Vanilla Sky is 2001. Uh-oh. Wait a second. Do we have the same birthday?
Wait, what?
Because this was the style at the time. We loved twist endings. Yes, yes. And I bought Blu-rays. I bought DVDs. I think the movie, what is it? What's that fucking shitty Dustin Hoffman, the Con Artist movie with Ed Burns? That's got a dumb twist ending that I bought, that I loved, so I had to have the DVD of it.
That is going to kill me. Yeah, what is that movie? That movie sucked
Confidence,
ass.
2003?
Confidence, yes, it is. 2003. We loved that shit at the time. It was the style of the time.
We just had fucking zero respect for the audience at every turn.
M. Night was big in 99 and, you know, Signs 2002. So the tradition continues.
Just absolutely wild. You know who directed that Confidence movie? Is James Foley.
Oh, right.
You remember him from some of them 50 Shades movies there, you see.
Oh, Foley artist. He made all the whipping noises.
But that is the end of this movie here. We'll go around the horn here for some final thoughts and I guess possible recommendations. Eric Siska.
Yeah. I mean, I remember also like thinking this was kind of a cool movie back in the day. I never owned it, never went back to it. And, it's not really a recommend, folks, but I do see what you could like about it. I really do miss these kind of like mid budget movies that had like a good crew and a great cast, or you know, an okay cast, and I just wish we would finance some of these kind of dumb things again. Even though I'm not recommending it, I still had an okay enough time watching it. I know it's dumb though, and it's not really a recommend, but that's the conundrum of the Wait What You Airy is I'm gonna probably like some of this stuff even though I don't really really like it.
Right. I feel you're onto something there. Steve Sadek.
Yeah, I can't. I've always been irritated by this one, even though I like, again, I think it's sort of similarly because I like the first half of the movie because of the mangledness of it all. Mangled, again, like I actually like, I was surprised how much I liked A Complete Unknown. Like, it's a really well-directed movie that like feels like a real movie, which, you know, a lot of those biopics do not. Right. So he's a guy that like, he doesn't have like a trademark of like, oh, that's a Mangled movie because such and such happens. It's just kind of like a really well-crafted little story. And that's what this movie almost is, but the screenplay is absolute dog shit. and I can't exactly recommend it. So no.
Yeah, you know, I will say, God, I mean, I guess it is a light recommend if you are, you know, in the camp of maybe being like a Mangold completist. I can totally see that. I mean, I do. I'm looking over at the his directorial efforts here, and like most of his movies that I've seen, I either enjoy or really enjoy to some degree. So even, I mean, speaking of fucking biopics, but like that, yes, Walk the Line,
sure,
you know, is sort of like the ground zero for those movies. Mm-hmm. Like that and Ray kind of around the same time. And so that, like, I get it. Like when you get the Walk Hard of it all and like it skewers that stuff. But like, if just there was so much of it and there's only so much you can kind of do with those kind of movies, I would argue Walk the Line is still kind of a pretty good movie. But this, yeah. I don't know, folks. You know, it is kind of cool, but like if you want an example of like what we're talking about this month, where the twist ruins the movie, you know, especially this one, I feel the twist is going to ruin it either way, unless it's really upfront, like we were talking about. So yeah, like you'd still come out of it if it was the last 2 minutes and be like, well, that was fucking stupid. Because you're telling me all that I invested in means nothing.
Yes.
Right. Like all the shit we invested in with Amanda Peet and her hard life, and it all means nothing.
And I will say about James Mangold, what I do also really appreciate about him, all these movies are very different, a lot of them anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
he takes risks and he does a lot of different projects, which is exciting because not many people do.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, I know you guys didn't like it as much, but I really liked Dial of Destiny. And like, for a dude to have the balls to be like, yeah, I can try to make a movie where only Steven Spielberg's made the other four. Like, that's a gutsy dude. And I appreciate the chance taking. So, you know, props to Mangold overall on the career.
I'm planning a rewatch of that. I'm actually kind of excited to do it.
I still have never seen it. I really do need to watch it.
Oh, yeah, you should.
I think mostly like James Mangold.
Speaking of a wait what, that movie's got a wait what at the end.
There's a little bit of a wait what at the end of that movie that I feel is why Steve will inevitably hate it. But it's kind of one of the reasons why I think it's, you know, rad as fuck and kind of beautiful.
It's kind of fun. I need to reevaluate it, but yeah.
Yeah. And anyway, so all this to say, this one, it's maybe a little bit of a recommend, but not a full-throated one. I believe Chris Cabin did say it was one of his favorite movies of 2003, though. So definitely make sure
that's right.
You all remember that, exactly, and repeat it at length. But that is going to do it for this episode this week. If you want more We Hate Movies, of course, check out the Patreon, patreon.com/WeHateMovies, where you can get this exact show without commercials, which is pretty sweet, including or in addition to all of our bonus shows, our family of shows that we have over there. We have already talked about this month's We Love Movies is going to be all about a big one for me, Donnie Darko, man.
That is like,
hell yeah,
18% of my teenage years. You know what I mean? It's just that movie.
Yeah, it was a big one, man. That was that, you know, it was like when we were of the age where people were going around the dorm room like, did you see this fucking movie?
Well, you know, it was really cool at the time. You know, you're getting into film and like, here's this weird new movie.
Right.
It really had a hold on that time period.
Absolutely. So we're doing that this month on We Love Movies. Do we know what's going down on the Gleep Glossary this month, Eric?
We will. You know what? We do, but you got to wait for the twist.
Yes.
Which I will reveal what it is next week.
Yes, exactly.
A lot of these early in the month episodes where we don't have the rest of the Patreon selections picked out. Sometimes these promos are a little thin.
Oh, I see. Yeah. We cut to Melina telling the truth over here. What's going on?
A similar situation with Animation Damnation. I'm going to try and find something with maybe a twist. I don't know what that's going to look like. But I will say, just to be clear, Chris is going to come back next week because whores do get second chances.
That's fair. At least our little whore. We have a once in a lifetime.
Oh, yes. This we know.
Oh,
yes,
but that's for February. Week. Oh, shit. That's for February, though.
Yeah, that's what we're
Oh, right. Month. Oh, my God.
Twist,
you
that's
guys.
This month.
Twist. Andrew has no idea what month it is. Take it away, Eric.
We are doing Tall, Hot, Blonde, all spelled weird, because it's a screen name. Okay, you have to understand that it's directed by Courtney Cox. It's a TV Lifetime movie from 2012
with Garrett Dillahunt, who's a real actor.
It's about him getting catfished, and it looks like a hoot. Watch along with us. Join us on Once in a Lifetime. It's spelled T-A-L, hot, blonde, no E on that blonde.
Oh, and it's all one word.
It is rentable online. Do not rent the documentary from 2009 because this is ripped from the headlines. We are doing the movie from 2012, directed and with a small part, I believe, by Courtney Cox.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Very much looking forward to that. Of course, we'll also have our monthly installment of Melrose 210, a show where we go through an episode of Beverly Hills 90210 and an episode of Melrose Place. Things are continuing to get crazy on both sides of the ball for that show. So if you want to get hip to that, catch up now, all on patreon.com/wehatemovies. Now, Steve. So next week, the show continues. Steve Sadak, Wait What You Wear is just getting underway. What movie are we talking about next week?
I haven't seen this movie in about 20 years. Vanilla Sky. So it's going to be a brand new.
Yes.
This is almost a clean slate. Like, I know, I kind of don't even remember what the twist is. It's just like Tom Cruise in a rubber mask for somebody.
You know what? Just go in and try to enjoy it.
Exactly.
The Cameron Crowe movie, I remember liking it when it came out. I remember because Kurt Russell's in it. I love Kurt Russell.
That's right.
Jason Lee as Tom Cruise's friend. And as a kid, I was always like, could you imagine having Jason Lee as a friend? Oh my God, that'd be amazing.
Also, it's just hilarious that Jason Lee being friends with Tom Cruise in a movie. I mean, that's
kind
of great. Both, you know, sharing the same religious belief, I guess, was what got them in there. But I'm excited about this because I saw this movie one time. I saw it in theaters and I didn't care for it. And I believe part of that is because I was a dumb teenager getting ready to like shit like Identity 2 years later.
But I haven't seen it in years, so who the hell knows? I just know I swallowed your cum, okay?
I got a story about that line.
Oh.
Which I'll tell next week.
Yeah, swallow it for now. Tell it next
That's
week.
That's right. I'll swallow it now, but I will spit it out to everybody next week where we're talking about Cameron Crowe's Vanilla Sky. Until then, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
Take it easy.